All right, welcome back, Rhetoric Warriors Podcast, where we are taking the world apart one word at a time to try to rebuild it with better words one at a time, or in a bunch, whatever. I'm Dr. Dan. I am the American rhetorician slash comedian of the moment in this podcast, and I have people on here to talk about message work of all types. Like, anybody that's doing professional message work, is shaping messages that are going to go out into the public, is of interest to rhetoricians. And my guest today is a guy I met a few weeks back, and he is a professional screenwriting coach who has a very interesting, I think, also additional offer to people, kind of life coaching people through the career of being a writer. And so we're going to talk about that today. Everybody welcome Brooks Elms?
Like the trees. Thank you. I appreciate being here. I actually thought we were going to talk about how we go to the same barber. So maybe I'm on the wrong podcast.
Here. Yeah, no, you know, that guy's everywhere these days.
Yeah, very popular. Guys, you know, good business. So, yeah, I am a life coach for writers. I'm actually also a WGA working writer. And I love them both equally. And I'm happy to be here to talk about words, text, and subtext.
Yeah, I mean, all the different modalities I've run into, like I've kind of worked the gamut of any type of message construction, all the way from teaching writing. I taught screenwriting and TV writing at university level for a few years, and I've done narrative stuff. Most of my direct writing work has been in stand-up and monologue and late night TV. But you know, you wander into people, especially here in LA, like this is an actual community and industry of writers and people shaping writers and all the sub industries that grow up around writing. And so it's really fascinating to live here. I've always found, because there are so many people coming at so many different niches.
Yeah, it's I love Los Angeles. I was in New York before this. I loved New York as well. And what I find the interesting thing about storytelling is, and any sort of use of words, you're really talking about like perspective on life. It's like, what are we doing here on the planet? Like, what's my life purpose? How am I showing up in the community? And if we're in any sort of field that uses words to describe that or to communicate something, it becomes a really fascinating study. But like, everybody communicates in some way, even if you're not writing it down, you're speaking it. So what I find, I'm 52 years old, but I still learn really amazing ways to communicate differently, one-to-one, to my wife, to my kids, to many people if I write a screenplay, or to other people. And it's just, to me, it's endlessly fascinating in terms of how to sculpt and craft the communication so that it unleashes something underneath us that sort of is deeper. It's really cool.
Yeah. So tell everybody, just give everybody a sort of the corral of what you do, like your approach. Introduce yourself to people a little bit who have never heard of Brooks Elms.
Yeah. So I started making movies with my friends in high school. I was like 15, and a buddy came up and was like, "Hey, we're going to make a karate movie. You want to be part of this?" I was like, "Oh, hell yeah, that sounds great." Made that movie, and it was amazing. And then we showed it to a friend, and he was laughing so hard, he actually fell out of his chair. And I was like, oh, like that's just as fun as actually making this thing. We made like 50 short film experiments before I even got to NYU Film School. Wrote, directed, and produced a few indie features after that. And then made my way to Hollywood, got signed at UTA, started selling scripts, assignments. And then along the journey, because even in professional writing at every level, A-listers or whatever, there's ups and there's downs and there's ups and there's downs. So I was in a period that was between writing assignments, and I had an opportunity to teach at UCLA Extension. And that was pretty interesting. I liked it. I liked creating a curriculum and kind of articulating what I had known. Because at this point, I've written over 40 screenplays. And so I was like, well, how am I doing what I'm doing? And can I communicate it in a way that's actually really helpful for other people? After doing that for a couple of years, I was like, this is great and it's fine. And yet there's a whole other level for me. And at that point, I realized, oh, I've been like in men's groups and doing personal growth stuff for well over 20 years. What if I become a life coach for screenwriters? What kind of impact can I make on people that way? Right. And circling back to what I said before about like communication is about, it's like your perspective on life and then how you're expressing that, whether it's words written, words spoken, or whatever. So for me, as a life coach for writers, it's really amazing because if they're my type of writers, and usually the people I work with are really accomplished in some way or another, and then they come to me and I help them get to the next level. For example, there's one woman who's written 40 novels. There's another guy who's got 3 million followers online. Another woman's day job is NASA. And it just goes on and on and on. And so I take their gifts and show them how to connect the dots at a professional screenwriting level. But the real juice of what I do is like I teach them the craft, which is great, but I really teach them about their life lessons and how to apply them to the stories. And so they end up living more satisfying lives and expressing themselves more powerfully in the screenplays. And there's wins all around. So, but language is really the way that we sort of open the channel to something deeper, if that makes sense.
Well, I think a lot of people don't, when they come in and look at writing from the outside, they think of technique, they think of the mechanics, they think of the writing processes. They don't think of what you're harvesting from. You know, like a really great storyteller is harvesting from their own emotions, their own deep experience, their own surprising, you know, sort of things that have happened in their lives and their own pains, all that stuff, you know, the same way actors do. And I don't think sometimes people don't look at writers as the same way. They think it was just as an intellectual process, but it's really like the really great writers are harvesting from the same kind of deep emotional wellsprings as a lot of actors do, as all actors do.
Well, any good actor, any good writer, yeah. You know, good. Good. I mean, look, everybody's on a journey. Everybody's, you know, in developing. So yeah, the insights that an artist has, whether they're expressing through performance as an actor does, or story as a storyteller does, is based on, there's a direct correlation between how much insight do they have on their life lessons and how they express that in words, really in story structure first, and concept first, then story structure, then words eventually. And if you do it in a certain way, the magic is you're writing in a sense like as intimate and as vulnerable as like your own journal entry, like emotionally, it's exactly that, but it's a metaphor so that when somebody else reads it, they go, oh, you wrote like that's me. Like we recognize greatness because they show us to ourselves a great story. And it's because the person, like, you know, Full Metal Jacket, the Stanley Kubrick film, one of my favorites. I've never been at war. I've had like none of those experiences. And yet that movie feels so weirdly personal to me. And I think Stanley Kubrick's never been at war. Right. But he had some deep fascinations with some of the themes and ideas that happen around war. How do you train people for war? Why do they do it? Blah, blah, blah. And he put them in that movie in such a way that must have been so deeply personal for him, because the authenticity crackles in a way for me where it feels relevant, even though I've had none of those experiences metaphorically.
Yeah, and that's the art and craft of it, right? Like you've got to get it into a story so that it can be experienced as a movie, which is, you know, like that Full Metal Jacket is also one of my favorite films. There's so much in that film. But most war and most military action is boredom and suffering. You know, it's time in between battles, it's confusion, it's, you know, putting up with the elements, all these horrible parts of war. But that's not a movie. Like making the audience as bored as you are during a war at times, or suffering in the same way. And I see sometimes, like, I think filmmakers try to do that. Like, oh, the character's bored, so I'm going to shoot this boringly. And, but like what the screenwriter does, they, you know, they may give you a little bit of that. Like there's even parts in Full Metal Jacket where you can see them like during downtime. Like I rewatched Platoon recently and there's a scene of them all during downtime and they're all bored basically, but you only give them a little bit of that, and that's the craft of it, right? Like you're cycling through a lot of emotions, a lot of very intense discrete emotions quickly, and that's why it's pleasurable to experience those emotions in pieces.
What you're speaking to is the difference between truth with a capital T and truth with a lowercase t. So the movie experience is a distillation of what actually happened. Right. So if it's based on something real, it could be completely made up. but it's really a series of metaphors that trigger all these thoughts and feelings in me and help me make sense of my life. So I love your insight about war being really amazingly boring and nothing going on, and then like flashes of absolute life or death mayhem. I mean, that's it. But like that observation about what war is really like is a totally different animal than what's going to be a great story that's set in the world of this war. And so the storyteller's job is to hold attention and to make something that's metaphorically not at all relevant to them, probably, feel totally personal and intimate. And really good storytellers are amazing at doing that.
Yeah, so talk about that a little bit. When you talk about coaching somebody through a script, because I've done a bunch of teaching, and I find teaching writing, especially fiction writing of any type, to be really difficult. Like as a teacher,
difficult
for me, because I'm a writer and I'm sort of like you, I'm actively a professional writer, and working with people, the compassionate side of teaching is like what you just said. Everybody's at a different stage. Everybody's trying to grow. You got to meet them where they are. You can't hold it against them that they're starting way back over there, you know. Yeah. But the reality of teaching that and trying to write, teach them writing at all these different levels of where they're at can be really draining, I find.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So let's talk about some of the word choice. You said you've got to meet them where they are. And to me, I get to meet them where they are.
Yeah, see, there's a nice life coach perspective. It's much more compassionate and caring.
Well, it's not just compassionate. It's also selfish. I'm not a saint. I love it. Like, I love it. I love having this conversation with you right now in the moment. It's fascinating. I'd rather be here than anywhere else. I love when I had a conversation with a client a couple hours ago, and I was able to meet him exactly where he was at. And we talked a little bit about screenwriting or whatever, and we talked a lot about life stuff, and how that life stuff applies to the next thing he's writing, his long-term career. See, the frustration that I had by teaching the craft, like you're talking about UCLA, it was a group of 20 students, one curriculum, you know, 80% of the class is behind or below in front of the curriculum. But there was very few people who I was able to meet exactly where they're at. So as a life coach, I'm like, no, just the people who are like into my thing and I'm into them. And I'm going to go effing deep. Like, where are they in the soul's unfolding of their life journey? And like, I don't give a shit if it's the first thing that they're writing as a talented person or they've won 7 Oscars. I can help them because I'm going to meet them where they are. And that's fascinating. I apologize for my weird thing, that my picture, because I'm like this weird gray sort of thing.
I tell people, you know, whenever they come into this podcast, I usually have a disclaimer about, hey, I'm not doing professional production here. Like, I'm sure like when I'm going to listen to this afterwards and we tried to mess with the sound, your sound still sounds a little low. Hopefully it's not bad. And who knows? It may sound perfect once you actually get the recording. So there's nobody here teching. So that's my point.
I'll just try one thing here. Hopefully, see if that makes a difference. It might. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, that makes a difference.
Look at that. Hey, they taught me something at NYU Film School. How did this? I'm like, okay, there you go. Okay.
Really. Don't flood the room with light.
So the point that I'm getting at here, which I think is really interesting, is it's like we get to meet the exact people we want on a journey in life. And when we tell stories at scale, we get to do it. You know, we tell one story and thousands or millions of people or tens of millions have that experience. When we have a one-to-one conversation right now, the magic of it is we get to meet each other using words and sounds and just spaces or whatever to sort of be together. And the better the conversation, the more we're meeting at that point.
Well, I think that's a great perspective on it. It's scope and scale at that point, right? It's always the same process of humans communicating to each other. You have a perspective, either you're trying to get me to understand it or, you know, whatever your purpose is in the communication, but it's always an exchange of symbols, you know, that is usually purposeful. You know, that's the reason why we engage. And sometimes that's through, like you said, a multi-log of I'm writing one thing and it's going to go out and potentially hundreds of millions of people are going to see it. And sometimes, you know, it's like one-on-one conversations, but they're still, this is why it goes back to rhetoric. It's still crafted at some level. Like everybody learns how to have a conversation. Everybody learns how to tell stories. And when you run into people like you, I think the big offer is, hey, this stuff, when you formalize it and you really start looking at the deep techniques and strategies and tactics within it, you can improve all that stuff. You know, just from a mechanical perspective, you're also, I like the offer of, you're also improving it from a sort of life, emotional self-awareness perspective.
Yeah. Well, that's where the real value is, right? So at best, traditional like film schools or drama programs are like, hey, here's some techniques about Hollywood structure or how, blah, 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 this or that, right? It's intellectual, right? For good and for bad. That's what they're doing. But you have people spending $200,000 to go to AFI's program, and they're not taught anything on how to actually get work, on how to handle the roller coaster of the business, on how to handle really the stuff that's actually going to get a return on that investment. They're just teaching craft. And so for me, craft is just like the bottom. Like, so what you get at the best places, you come to me, I'm going to, like, that's a lock. I'm a professional. I'm going to teach you how to write at a professional level. It's going to be awesome. But that's like the basement. The real value is, how do you not just write the best thing of your life when I'm, you know, working with you step by step, but how do you write the next one that's even better, and the one after that that's even better? And then when you actually get more success than you can handle, so you don't turn to some sort of insane drug binge or whatever, you've got a reasonable expectation of what to expect. And fame is a mother effer, right? Because you all of a sudden have one set of social dynamics, and then all of a sudden all your circle shifts. You get to be way more helpful than everybody else around you. And that is a mind F. And at the same time, you have this, you're a human being. You have the same problems, same insecurities, same doubts. You know, you're not whatever, that like synchronicity just smiled and it hit. And you know, there's other people that are just as talented, if not more talented than you. They don't have your power. It's an absolute mind F. And so very few people make that transition gracefully, because we're not prepared for it. We're just like, oh no, I'm one of the guys or whatever. And all of a sudden you have that surge of, so the general two strategies, which are, neither of them are very good, are circle the wagons, like take just one or two people with you, and then F everybody else. I can't trust anybody anymore. Or kind of like F everybody. I'm just going to go latch on to somebody else. And like, and it's almost like those people have died, you know? And so to me, that's a heartbreaker, you know, because it's really just about not having your life in order to be able to receive that much awesomeness. And so I want people to come to my program to be able to handle that immense success, to be able to handle the storms that are on the way to that success. By the way, after you hit it once, there's a storm waiting for you right next. That's the sophomore slump, right? And so if you do it once, you can do it multiple times, but like, I show you how to do that systematically. And to me, that's 1,000 times more interesting and more fun than just showing you how to like structure a screenplay. Like, again, for me, craft is like the what actually ends up happening. We develop a screen in my main program. We develop a new story together. It's the best thing you've ever written. The way that you write it is repeatable, but it's really an excuse to talk about mindset stuff or career strategy stuff. It literally, and because that's where you're going to get the most value. You're going to think about conversations with me for decades, and you're, oh God, I'm glad we had this thing, because now I know how to deal with this storm or deal with that storm or deal with this shark in Hollywood or deal with whatever, or deal with those inner sharks. Because they are there, and those are the only really significant things stopping you from succeeding. It's not your talent. Like, you have to have at least a minimal amount. You have to be able to show up as a professional. You know, hit deadlines, be true enough to your word, be willing to iterate. Like, here's a nice myth that people have in terms of storytellers. They think somebody like Tarantino or anybody just sits down and comes up with one idea and it's genius. It's not. What you have is everybody, like, you pick the most talented person that you can think of, that person still needs to iterate. And most professionals iterate by actually literally brainstorming 20, 50, 100 things, and they find one or two that are good. Sometimes people do the iteration in their minds, so it doesn't seem like they're iterating, but I promise you they're all iterating. So, but the amateur does like three, they bang something out in the weekend. They're like, wait, where's Netflix? They just don't realize that. No, you have to iterate like 100x more, to actually play with the big boys, because you're talking about competing against four generations. Like the most creative storytellers of four generations, you're competing against them to find a producer to invest a ton of money and your reputation. Like this producer is investing his or her reputation on your idea, lots of money, lots of time, lots of whatever. That damn thing has to be great. It's not going to be something that somebody's like, I like screenwriting, and knocked out in a weekend. You're just, there's 100,000 screenplays written every year. Like, how are you going to be better than those? Like 75% of people that make it to the Writers Guild don't even set up a second WGA deal, because they got the talent, but they don't have the system to replicate it. I love showing people the systems, because if they can do it once, I promise you they can do it over and over and over again, but they have to be mindful of it. And most people aren't.
Yeah. I think I come to all this, my biggest background in writing and teaching and doing producing and creative development for others is from stand-up. I taught stand-up comedy workshops forever and comedy writing workshops. And
awesome.
I creative managed kind of de facto a few people's careers, because it's the same thing. You see somebody come in with a certain set of assets, like either they're a really interesting, flaky character with crazy life stories, or they're really great on stage, or there's just something about them that, you know, that if they can hold on to that piece of uranium that they do naturally, and then augment it with all the professional things that go around it, you know, like learn to work different venues and learn to write great script and learning to have a good career advisor around, all the things that will derail them, or even just, staying away from bad influences in comedy, like people who laugh too easily. You see a lot of famous pro comics, they get very successful and because they have a really good ear and they're very exacting in what they're going to use. But then everybody starts laughing at everything they say and they lose their ear and their script starts to descend. And so I've seen a lot of this in stand-up, and same way that you did, I broke it apart into like maybe 20 different things that you actually need to be able to deal with if you want to be a professional stand-up and ascend in the industry. And one of them is that like careerism, right? Because I've seen people who end up listening to the wrong career advisors, the wrong management. There's a guy in Austin, one of my favorite comedy people I've ever met. His name's Jimmy Roulette, and just super talented. People love this guy. He should be all the way from like being able to write to be able to perform to being a great character. And he tried and tried, but his management, wasn't doing the things that he's, and I told him, because I was coming back to Austin from Hollywood and I knew his manager and I knew what the guy was not doing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, you got to get real management that's connected in Hollywood and will tell you the truth about things. And I just watch him he just faded out of the industry.
Yeah. And that's not uncommon. People that have the talent, they have the chops and whatever, but like, if you don't have the career strategy, because a lot of it's just about expectations. People get their expectations, even just on the craft side. Let's talk about the craft side. Like, hey, I got an idea. Well, what is a movie? Well, you get like final draft or whatever. You just start writing down what they say and do. And that's like what a script is. But that, I have a 9-step process. That's like pretty much step like 8 or 9. like that, they're missing like all the real questions that the audience wants to know. What's the premise? What are the core story choices? So, and the same thing with career. Like, oh no, when I did this. This is my experience personally. I got in. I finally. This wasn't like right out of NYU. This was like, I don't know. Deep into my career, I finally got to the point where Hollywood was paying attention to me. I got signed at UTA, and I was like, great. Series of writing assignments. I'm set for life, and I don't have to have mansions, but just like, I want to pay my bills. I'm great. I'm in. I'm the best spec screenplay salesman in town. I mean, the guys, nobody sells more than him. Great. But that's, he has 92 other clients at the time. So it's untenable. It's like, you can't rely on representation. You have to have realistic expectations. And I was expecting, like, here's another thing. So I was like, He signed us. It was great. This script was going out, blah, blah, blah. I go, awesome. So here's 10 more, just like it. Some of them better, some of them worse, but let's go. And they were like, oh, it was actually two agents. And they were like, yeah, send me one. I was like, what? What? We just, dude, there's more. You just like that one. Let's go. You know, let's 10X that shit. Let's go. And they can't do it. They've got 92 other clients. And one other story about that is I had this A-lister attached to my project, who still is, and he's amazing. And I did a draft for him. He loves it, his director. And and this guy just made his rep, like, he got paid $8 million in some studio film. So he made that agency $800,000, right? I was like, great. So like, yeah, if there's 93 clients, you know, there's some they're not paying attention to, but the ones they're paying attention to are the ones that have just made them $800,000 that year, right? So for them, when they've got a new project, they call up and they go, hey, I've got this project, let's go. Because he gave them 800,000 reasons to pay attention to him. But this guy, I finished it. He goes, look, notes are great. This is awesome. This is ready to go. And he goes, okay, how are we going to strategize to get my agent interested? I was like, what? What? You got to sell your agent. Like, you didn't just 800,000 reasons to like pay. Like, you can't just call up and say, yo, sell this shit. Like, it doesn't matter. They're human beings. Everybody has to get sold at every level. So obviously they take the call and they consider whatever, but like it is, and it was like, yeah, geez, you really can't depend on reps. Like, they might help, and they can. By the way, the two scripts that my you know, agent went out to, he sold both of them. He was a sniper. But I brought him other things that he was not sure about, and he didn't even go out with them. My manager goes out with everything, but he wouldn't. So it's like, but over the years, I go, okay, now I know how the water is wet. I just get the surfboard. Before I knew that, I'm freaking out. I'm making, you know, family decisions, business decisions based on expectations that are set for where. Like, I went to NYU Film School, and even there we had cockamamie ideas of what is making it, what is success, what sort of money are we looking at, when do you get the steps of the deals, you know, when can you trust somebody saying something in Hollywood, and when can you not? Like, there's a million things that are career strategy things that you're not getting anywhere else, really, unless you know working writers and they have the conversation. So to me, this coaching service is amazing because I've already had this experience. I get to relay it, and it gets to be ridiculous value, because once you have reasonable expectations, now you can take Hollywood or make them come to you. When you've got the cockamamie expectations that literally almost everybody coming out of film school or MFA programs, even the ones that are paying $200,000 or $160,000 or $120,000, like literally top dollar, they're not taught jack squat about actual career strategy. They're just taught craft. So it's, you know.
Yeah, I had the same experience teaching at UT Austin. A lot of great energy, a lot of excited people. I taught advanced TV writing there. And the students coming through, they all had nepotistic, not all of them, but a lot of them had nepotistic connections to Hollywood. So I knew they would get in as a first level. And some of them have. Like, there was even a guy, there's quite a few people that have come out of Austin and have sort of made their way up to the first level of Hollywood, and even some like a little bit higher where they got some exposure. But unless, like what you're saying, unless they develop very quickly that true business sense of what the industry is, and even like what you talk about there about having to pitch all the time, having to persuade all the time. I used to, every year I was a panelist at the Austin Film Festival, and they have this cool thing where they do round tables where they bring like five professionals in, and then there's a table of 12 people sitting, and you change tables every 15 minutes. So those people get to meet five new professionals and they get asked questions. And so I would always sit down and be like, okay, I'm a comedy writer. Somebody pitch me one of their comedy ideas, one of their comedy scripts.
Yeah.
And it was just silence. And I'm like, you had a professional comedy writer who just sat down and was like, hey, I'm here. Why don't you pitch me something? Like, if you knew your pitch that well and you were really good at it, this could actually be a moment, because I can take you to comedy sources.
That's right.
And
that's
like, you're just not prepared.
And you would love to. Like, if somebody says something and you laughed your ass off.
Oh, yeah.
You'd I love helping that people. Door wide open, of course. But people have this idea that, oh, no, Hollywood's closed off, whatever. But it's really, when we're talking about the mindset stuff, there's these self-limiting beliefs. And it takes practice. It takes practice to have the stones to be like, oh, okay, random person that, because what they're afraid of is you saying they're not funny and they're untalented, they waste whatever, whatever. And but those are just, that's just chatter. Like, who gives a shit if you like it or not? So, but it takes practice to kind of talk yourself into and really believe. So confidence comes from basically seeing evidence that you're the real deal. And so you can create lifestyle design for yourself where there's evidence that just flows. You surround yourself by really talented people. You're talking about the craft all day long. You're devoted to it. You're making money from it. All those things are basically antidotes against imposter syndrome, right? If you have evidence that you're the real deal, that you're totally devoted to it, you walk in, you know you're the shit. Right. If you don't know other writers, if you don't spend time doing it, if you don't show up and write, if you don't, all those things are a lot. We all have imposter syndrome in us. It will flare up if we don't have a lifestyle design that's conducive to doing it at a professional level. And that goes for everybody. That's one of the things that happen with legends. They become a legend, they whatever. And then, like you said, they surround themselves with people who aren't really helping them keep the tools sharp. They're people that are sort of, it's a little cushier. And so they end up getting, even at the legendary level, imposter syndrome. I'm not as good as I used to be, blah, blah, blah. I've worked with that cohort before. And it was fascinating because at first I thought, oh, they're going to be like a totally different, but it's not. The problems with legends or people who lost their fastball is really the same problems of people that haven't broken in yet. They're just, they're limiting themselves with beliefs they're not aware of. So the cool thing about working with a mentor of any sort, and by the way, like I'm a premium coach, you want to work with me, you got to bring it. But like I can show you lots of ways to get mentorship on any budget. You can mentor your friend. You can basically co-coach each other. You can get ones that are just starting out. You can get free mentorship. I mean, if mentorship is the absolute most streamlined way to develop your craft, and so whatever budget you're dealing with, and anybody's interested in hearing this, you can reach out to me. I'll show you to do it on whatever your budget is. And you generally get what you pay for. I'm, like I said, 20 years of personal growth just because I'm fascinated by it. You're going to get a different experience than like a free mentorship place. There's a great site called a great Facebook group called The Inside Pitch. Wonderful. This guy, Chris Lockhart from I think WME, amazing guy. Great discussion group. They list free mentorship. So, and literally 20, 30 people. Hey, I'll mentor you for free. So if you're hearing this, you want mentorship from professionals, go. They'll do it for free. The thing is you get what you pay for, right?
Right.
They're going to maybe do coffee with you, maybe give you some notes on a script, and they're going to mostly talk about their own experience and their own war stories, which is awesome. It's free. Why not? But what you're not going to get is, somebody that gets, the beautiful thing about coaching is you have to deliver what you're paying, right? So Tony Robbins, like $1 million a year for like to work with Tony, or a million for whatever, like astronomical money. So if you have it, you give it, you go to Tony because you feel like you're going to get more than that in response. There's other coaches I've heard of, 200,000 for a year or whatever. It's like whatever. It's a really beautiful craft because in a way it's like screenwriting. It's like you get paid whatever you can negotiate. And if the studio wants to pay you $1 million because there's a bidding war or because they know that they can make a lot more million, it's a good deal. If they pay $1 for your script and it's no good, then that's not a good deal. And it's the same thing with coaching. It's like you want to, whatever, you be really specific, whatever coaching relationship you have, even if you're co-coaching with a friend for free, like if your friend's no good at this, don't do it. That's not a good deal. If your
Right.
friend's amazing, but you're not very good, that's not a good deal. Find a good deal for yourself at whatever budget it is. But it's absolutely the best. I get coached all the time. All the time. I love it. Because as good as I am about this stuff, we can't see our own blind spots. We don't know what we don't know. So coaching is or any sort of mentorship relationship is super helpful. And then the key is just find whatever fits for you.
Yeah, I tell a story sometimes about teaching. Trying to teach new stand-ups because they come in, they have their own sense of humor, but they haven't done professional stage stand-up, and it's not the same. Like, and every venue is different. I used to teach a class at Charlie Goodnight's in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is a great comedy club. It's actually, I think, gone out of business or moved now during the pandemic, but it was there for 20 years and just probably top five comedy club in the country.
Nice.
And the audiences were just really well groomed and just beautiful, ready. But they were advanced audiences because they'd seen great stand-up for a long time.
So
I would vet people before they would go on the open mic night, and they would do their stuff for me. And I'd be like, I would not do this joke, or, you know, try to stay away from this because this audience won't like it. And they'd always look at me like, who are you? What do you know? And then they would go up that night and do the material, and the audience would be, you know, it's crickets. It's the perfect, you know, way to vet your coach right there, is because you get instant failure if you follow your own instincts and advice. And so they would come off stage. They would just look at me like, told you.
And that's an interesting thing, right? Because we need to, at the end of the day, we need to follow our own instincts. And yet, it's always our self-limiting beliefs that are stopping us from our next level, right? So how do we know when we're following our instincts in a way that's serving us? And how do we know when it's actually a pattern that's holding us back?
Yeah, and it's hard. Like I said, you know, I talk about it sometimes. As I was a teacher for a long time, and I think you do need a sense of compassion for people and ability to see where they are, and an agreement that you need to, you don't need to teach everything down to every single person to meet them where they are exactly, but you need to understand that it may take them longer to crawl up, you know, the ladder to get to where you are. Yeah. And so having enough compassion to go, look, I know what you're trying, and not just sort of end up where like bookers and things like that. If you don't hit the mark, they just cut you. You're like, next. And a coach, you don't want to, that's not what you do. You're like, okay, I'm going to try to devise things, life advice or exercises or more connections that'll get you where you want to go. And that's the whole job to me, you know, when you're coaching somebody, is let me really think about what I think you need to get you where you want to go.
That's right. Well, and the step beyond that to execute on what you're talking about is actually questions, because what prevents, you know, a good coach from becoming great, the great coaches will really ask juicy questions so that the client discovers for themselves. And that's actually the answer to what I said before. How do you know what's holding you back? What's a good instinct or kind of a problematic instinct? Good questions will help you discern the difference. So you're telling me that you want, what I think I'm hearing you say is you want to go here. Is that correct? As opposed to me assuming, well, you want to go here, whatever, because, you know, because then I start talking and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, I don't even really want to go there. I want to go over here. So the best I do as a coach is ask really good questions. And then they basically walk themselves through a strategy that's more grounded, more realistic. And the amazing thing is, you actually bend, like, the odds, you know, 100,000 screenplays written this year, right? Those are not good odds when how many are actually getting bought at any substantial level, 200, 300, 500, something, you know, if TV shows, then another 500 or whatever. And then like only 10% of them actually get produced, right? So significantly, you know, some small odds. But if you actually double down on the fundamentals, your odds go way up. For example, like, you know, chances of average person playing in the NBA, very low. Chances of you playing in the NBA, if you are 7 feet taller or above, 1 in fucking 6. I don't know if I can curse here. 1 in 6, dude. Like, what? If you're not 7 foot, it's 1 in, I don't know, millions. It's a lot. If you are 7 foot or above, so you're just, I mean, it's like, so again, that being 7 feet isn't a fundamental you can learn, but you can actually learn fundamentals of communication, where you're actually going, what do I know? What's my authentic voice? What is the producer looking for? There are fundamentals that you can dial in where all of a sudden the odds bend in your favor. I'm not just going to figure it out one weekend. I'm going to literally my rest of my life, I'm going to be a storyteller, and I'm going to get a little bit better every day. Like, you start doing fundamentals like that, it becomes inevitable that you will succeed to some degree or another, in the same way that, you know, so you go from 1 in a skillion to 1 in 6 in the NBA, you can damn well be sure you're going to succeed at one level or another if you do the fundamentals enough. You know, if you write 100 screenplays, for hell. I mean, how do you not like sell at least a couple of them and you write 100? Like, so like if you put in enough volume, if you do enough, there's a few fundamentals that you will, if you do them, but the truth is people are, again, expectations. They're not aware of what the fundamentals are, or they're not really to commit the full degree. So they do a little bit, or like your friend, your talented writer, you know, a stand-up friend had these expectations about his management or whatever, and it didn't work out and got overwhelmed, and they get kind of washed out or burned out or something. So, and that breaks my heart because, you know, if you're creative and this is what you live for, it's awesome. And to not be able to do it with really awesome people and be part of what you're doing to make a living, it's that, you know, that's a heartbreaker to me. I hate.
Yeah,
And no,
especially when you run into somebody where you know where they could get.
Right. It's brutal. And on the flip side, when I work with somebody and I know the chances of them having made it in the way that I helped them, if they had never found me, you know, even if they go to AFI or USC, or two people from USC in my program, right? Why? Because they learned the craft and they were amazing, but they don't know how to apply the craft.
Right.
And I help people do it over and over and over. Like, I don't want somebody winning one Oscar. I want them winning multiple. My program's only 3 years old, so nobody's won Oscars yet. But like, check back in 5 or 10 years, brother. I'm gonna run laps around all those other programs. And again, yeah, I'm bravado and blah blah blah. But that BS aside, it's just this. It's the customization. When you're doing one to one, you're gonna get better results than a group than the group than the group the old school thing. It's just a better model.
Well, and I agree with all of that. I think you have a really good approach. I think people should check it out. They should, you know, get to know you a little bit and feel it, right? I mean, that's part of the thing with a coach.
Well, yeah.
You can
Well, let me jump in
intellectualize
there
it, but you need to
because
feel it.
let me jump quick because I don't want this to be a plug for me, right? It's fine if people are like me, and that's fine. But like, what I do want to plug is get mentorship in general. Like, whatever you can afford, you can do a 5-minute mentorship. Hey, you know, writer of a favorite TV show that I like, talk to them on Twitter and say, I loved your episode. Can you answer me this one thing? Like, you can, people will, if you approach them in a nice way, people will help you. So, like, on any budget, whatever, mentorship is a really powerful way to help yourself move forward. If you have, you know, if you've got some resources or whatever your resources are, don't overspend. But if you have something within your budget, spend, you're probably not going to get a better bang for your buck than some sort of mentorship thing. Again, starting with just like coaching you and your friends, and that's awesome.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know you got another call coming up. But again, it's not, to me, it's not pluggy. Like I'm a rhetorician. I pitch things for a living. I love persuasion. I think people denigrate persuasion because so often it's trying to cover for flaws and, you know, deficits in what you're offering.
Yeah.
But the people that are offering really authentically good stuff, you want them to be really open about, hey, I think you should take this. Like, I love plugs because how is you going to find really good people? You know,
Yeah.
so, and I
Well,
think you probably, you know, and I've talked to a lot of people who do coaching and things like that, and you come across as very authentic and I think very experienced and skilled in this. So
thanks.
good
I appreciate
stuff.
it. I love it. I love it. And yeah, it was a long, winding road for me to really find it. But yeah, I love it as much as I love writing my screenplays. So it's a lifestyle design I've created for myself. That's my dream life. And so, and I've done it for myself, and I can teach other people to do it for them. So it's awesome.
So real quick, tell people how to find you, how to reach out.
BrooksElmsCoaching.com, or Brooks Elms at LinkedIn, Brooks Elms on Twitter/X, Google Brooks Elms, or YouTube Brooks Elms. I'm all over the internet, and wherever you go, I trust the synchronicities of the universe to find the exact piece of content. At least if you go, yeah, this guy's no good, I don't like him. Or it's kind of interesting to see something else. Like, yeah, if you like my vibe, you'll find me. That's how I feel.
There you go. Go find Brooks Elms. There's many, many avenues to up the mountain of Brooks Elms. So go check
Thanks,
that
Dan.
out. Thanks. I appreciate it very much. Fun conversation. This has been the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Get out there, persuade people, coach people, mentor people, do it all because everybody needs help. We'll see you next time.